Is it okay to be bothered by our culture? Here's Skip Heitzig to show us what Paul thought about that.
It's a reasoned, slow-growing, well-thought-through feeling of anger at what he saw. He was provoked within him. Why? Because Paul saw past the veneer, the beauty, the art, the statues, the silver, the gold. And he saw the emptiness, the pain left by idolatry and philosophy. And he couldn't relax. Paul couldn't do the tourist thing in Athens. You know, you would not want to have Paul on a vacation, probably. Because this guy just didn't seem to relax. You know, he's torn up inside. What he saw did something to him, and he starts feeling this way. And I have a question. Do you ever carry with you an inward provocation? Do you ever feel bothered by what you see in your culture? Or have we become so apathetic we just say, yeah, whatever. It's cool, man. It's just the way it is.
Make the connection at the foot of the cross. Study.
If you spend time online, you probably run across a fun quiz or two. They help us peg ourselves and discover what we like and don't like. Some of the most popular quizzes tell you the era of time you truly belong in. Others round out your favorite foods and drinks or focus on style. It can be fun to learn more about ourselves, but one challenge remains. What do we do with our culture? Well, today in The Connection, Skip Heitzig continues to follow the life of Paul with our series, Paul's Long Road to Rome. And today, we'll see how Paul responded to and connected with one of the most beautiful and culturally progressive cities of his time, Athens. We'll have more on that in just a moment. But first, I'd like to invite you to consider adding the Skip Heitzig app to your smart device today. It's free and gives you complete access to the Connection teaching archives, as well as the ability to take notes and so much more. That's the Skip Heitzig app, and you can download it today from skipheitzig.com. You know, the solid teaching you hear each day on The Connection is a gift from the community of believers who support this broadcast. And we're so thankful for those who have kept The Connection on the air each year. Did you know you can become part of helping the teaching you enjoy continue airing each day? It's easy to do when you become a financial partner with The Connection. Learn how you can join in today at skipheitzig.com. Just click the Donate tab to begin. Well, Paul's understanding of Athens and the culture there is packed with insight and help for every believer trying to make sense of our current culture. Learn more today here on The Connection as Skip Heitzig begins this new teaching, Surviving and Thriving in a Cultural Swamp.
And make the connection.
If you have a Bible or a Bible app close at hand, I hope you'll join us in Acts chapter 17. Now here's Skip Heitzig to begin today with this anecdote.
There was a woman who was in her car behind a driver, a man who was in the front, and they were both stopped at a red stoplight. The stoplight turned green. The man in the lead car didn't notice, so he sat there. The woman behind him watched as cars behind her just went around both of them and made it to the intersection. So she was angry and she yelled through her windshield at the driver in front and pounded her steering wheel in hopes that he would go. He didn't go. So the light that was now green turned yellow. Now she's beside herself. So she honks the horn and he looks up and he sees the light and accelerates just in time to make it through the intersection himself only, leaving her again to suffer through another cycle of a red light. Now she goes ballistic. She starts cussing. As a guy goes by, she puts her hand out the window and gives a certain inordinate hand gesture. She's, you know, yelling inside the car, pounding the dashboard, and suddenly she hears a tap on the window. It's a man tapping. It's a policeman tapping. He has a gun in his hand, and he says, "I want to see both of your hands in the air. Step out of the car slowly." She does. "Put your hands on the car." She does. The policeman takes handcuffs out and handcuffs the lady, takes her to the city jail, leaves her in for 2 hours. 2 hours later, the same police officer opens up the cell, lets her out, and says, "Ma'am, I am so sorry. I made a mistake. However," he said, "when I pulled up behind you while you were blowing your horn and flipping the guy off and cursing, I noticed the Choose Life license plate holder and the What Would Jesus Do bumper sticker and the Follow Me to Sunday School bumper sticker and the chrome-plated fish emblem on the trunk. So naturally, I assumed you had stolen the car." Hey, what do people naturally assume about our lives as they see us out there, especially behind the wheel? How do we interact with our culture? How different are we from our culture? How do we, who believe in Jesus Christ as Lord and Sovereign, how do we interact in a culture largely given over, dominated by an ideology that is against our own? That's where we turn to Acts 17 to see how Paul did it in Athens. Now, there's just something exciting about Paul the Apostle being in Athens. Here's the great apostle in one of the great cultural cities of the ancient world. It was. Today, to this day, we are still impacted by ancient Greek culture. It was Alexander the Great's dream to Hellenize the world, make everything Greek. And effectively, he succeeded. Because today, art, drama, literature, philosophy, architecture, and politics all have Greece to thank for its root system. Now, we're going to look this morning, beginning in verse 16, we're going to read all the way to the end of the chapter. Then we're going to go back. And we're going to find this. There are four stages, four steps to not only surviving in our culture, but making an impact, thriving in it. Verse 16. "Now, while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw that the city was given over to idols. Therefore, he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and with the Gentile worshipers, and in the marketplace daily with those who happened to be there. Then certain Epicurean and Stoic philosophers encountered him. And some said, 'What does this babbler want to say?' Others said, 'He seems to be a proclaimer of foreign gods because he preached to them Jesus and the resurrection.' And they took him and brought him to the Areopagus, saying, 'May we know what this new doctrine is of what you speak? For you are bringing some strange things to our ears. Therefore, we want to know what these things mean.' For all the Athenians and the foreigners who were there spent their time in nothing else but either to tell or hear some new thing." Sounds like a modern university. "Then Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, 'Men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious. For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, "To the unknown God." Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, him I proclaim to you. God, who made the world and everything in it, since he is the Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. Nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. And he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings, so that they should seek the Lord in hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he's not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and we have our being. As also some of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. Therefore, since we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think of the divine natures like gold or silver or stone or something shaped by art and man's devising. Truly, these times of ignorance God overlooked, but now commands all men everywhere to repent, because he has appointed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he has ordained. He has given assurance of this to all by raising him from the dead. And when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some mocked, while others said, "We will hear you again on this matter." So Paul departed from among them. However, some men joined him and believed, among them Dionysius the Areopagite, a woman named Damaris, and others with him. Now let's go back over the text, and at the front end we're going to go a little more in depth, and at the back end we're just going to take some sweeping principles. There were four distinct steps that Paul took while he was there at Athens with this culture that made him very effective in this culture. And the four steps are this: vision, how you see; emotion, what you feel; action, what you do about what you feel based on what you see; and finally, expression, what exactly do you say to people? The first one is vision. It says in verse 16, while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw. What is it that Paul saw when he was in Athens? Well, he would have seen a magnificent city. Even to this day, I visited Athens. It's spectacular, the ruins of that town. Athens had been conquered by the Romans around 146 BC. And yet, even though the Romans took it over, they had such regard for Athens that it was, at the time of Paul, regarded a free city, occupied by the Romans, but very respected by them. And he would have seen architectural creativity unrivaled in the ancient world. Talk about eye candy for the first century. Athens had it. He would have seen a 60,000-seat stadium. He would have seen the Odeon of Pericles, it was called, a great theater there. The ruins are still there to this day. He would have seen a music hall. He would have seen the marketplace called the Agora with its painted porticos from famous artists of the past. And he would have seen, as anyone today would see, this 500-foot rise in the center of the city called the Acropolis. And on the top of the Acropolis, two magnificent temples. The Parthenon, still there today, dedicated to the goddess Athena, from whom the city is named. And another temple, the Erechtheion. He would have seen that. It would have been marvelous. That's what he saw physically. But he saw something else, and this is the point that I'm getting at, is that the first step to surviving and thriving in a cultural swamp is that you're able to see correctly. He says that he saw that the city was given over to idols. There's an old saying that a Roman coined of that era. He said, it's easier to find a god than a man when you go to Athens. And he was not overstating it. Because the population of Athens was 10,000 human beings, there were 30,000 statues along the streets of that town. So there was a 1-to-3 correspondence of gods and goddesses to human beings. They were everywhere. And Paul saw the artwork, the temples, the porticos, the paintings, the statues, the kind of stuff that we say, quick, get a picture of me by that. But Paul was stirred inside. We'll get to that feeling in a moment. But he saw past the art, saw past the beauty, and saw the emptiness that those idols left in the hearts of human beings. saw more than that. Verse 18, we're introduced to two groups of philosophers, Epicureans and Stoics. Now, you know, Athens was the home of the philosophers, right? Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, Zeno, Epicurus. This is where the great minds of the past formulated worldviews that still today impact the way people think. Now, two groups are mentioned here, and since they're mentioned, we ought to look at them so we know what Paul saw when he was there. There were Epicureans. Epicurus was a philosopher who believed in a worldview that is still very prevalent today. He thought there are gods, plural, in the universe, but they have very little, if anything, to do with human beings on the earth. So they were practical atheists. Now, Epicurus taught, and see if this doesn't sound familiar, that we are all here by chance, and that the universe came about by a random collision of particles that made what we have now, so that you live and then you die. And when you die, there's no more existence. You don't exist anymore after death. So, said Epicurus, the chief aim of life is pleasure through experience, and along with pleasure, to avoid pain at all costs. Now, what generally happens to people who think that way? They become party animals. And the Epicureans were the first century party animals. It was all about pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. Avoid pain at all costs. Because they said, we're an accident. So make the best of it. Now, there was another group of philosophers that Paul saw when he was there. Stoics are also mentioned in verse 18. That's a sort of the New Age philosophy of ancient Athens. Stoics were a group found by a philosopher by the name of Zeno. They were pantheistic. Now, if you don't know what that is, pantheists believe that God and the world around us are one and the same. The Greeks, Stoics, called it the world soul. It sort of goes like this. God is in everything, man. God is the flowers and the trees and the rocks and the ground. It's all God. It's all seamless. There is no distinction. That's pantheism, and those were the Stoics. They believed, unlike the Epicureans, in fatalism. You can't change anything. It's predetermined already in advance. So your chief goal in life, if you were a Stoic, was to detach, to be aloof, to be apatheos, apathetic, without feeling, without emotion, because everything was predetermined. It's not surprising then that the first two Stoic leaders committed suicide with that kind of thinking. So here's Paul in Athens. It's beautiful. And there's all these philosophical groups around him. And they're so confused about life, they don't agree with each other, and every school of philosophy was different. No wonder Socrates said to his students, by all means, get married. If you find a good wife, you'll be very happy. If you find a bad wife, you'll become a philosopher. They were all messed up. So Paul in Athens saw physical magnificence, but he also saw spiritual decadence. Here's where I'm driving the point home this morning. For you and I to survive, for you and I to thrive in our cultural swamp, we have to see the world differently. We have to go deeper. We have to peel away the veneer and see what's underneath that stuff, that glitz, that glamour, that promise. In fact, I would put it this way. We need to put God's glasses on. Duncan Matheson, a Scotsman, said it right. God, stamp eternity on my eyeballs. Because when that happens, you see things differently. You remember Jesus when the crowds were following him in Galilee? And it says Jesus saw the multitudes. Now, Jesus saw people differently than you and I see people. When we see a multitude, we sometimes see them as an inconvenience. You know, you're at the mall at Christmas time and there's multitudes and you think, oh, I wanted to get here first before all the selfish people did, but they beat me to it. Or we see multitudes in a spiritual context as the proof of the effectiveness of our ministry. We don't read Jesus doing that. He didn't say, Peter, look how many people I got coming to my gig. No, it says he saw the multitudes and he saw them that they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. He viewed them differently. And we need to see life differently. That's always the first step. How we see the world around us leads us to the second step, and that is emotion, what you feel. Verse 16, while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him when he saw the city was given over to idols. You could even translate that verse, Paul had a fit. The word that is used here is a medical term that originally spoke of having an epileptic seizure. And so it's generally a word that describes anger, especially the anger of God toward idolatry. He's provoked. He's angered. It's not that he flew off the handle. It's a reasoned, slow-growing, well-thought-through feeling of anger at what he saw. He was provoked within him. Why? Because Paul saw past the veneer, the beauty, the art, the statues, the silver, the gold. And he saw the emptiness, the pain left by idolatry and philosophy. And he couldn't relax. Paul couldn't do the tourist thing in Athens. You know, you would not want to have Paul on a vacation, probably. Because this guy just didn't seem to relax. You know, he's torn up inside. What he saw did something to him, and he starts feeling this way. And I have a question. Do you ever carry with you an inward provocation? Do you ever feel bothered by what you see in your culture? Or have we become so apathetic, we just say, yeah, whatever. It's cool, man. It's just the way it is. Now, I used Jesus a minute ago as an example of seeing the multitude. But what Jesus saw did something to what he felt. He saw the multitude weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. The Bible says that Jesus was filled with compassion for them.
You know, learning to see differently causes us to feel differently about our culture and the situations we encounter. And it gives us clear vision, which enables us to respond like Jesus no matter what comes our way. And that's where we'll have to pause for today here in The Connection with Skip Heitzig. And today's teaching was the first half of Surviving and Thriving in a Cultural Swamp. You can listen to this entire teaching again and share it with a friend from skipheitzig.com. And today's teaching was part of our newest Connection series, Paul's Long Road to Rome, and is available as an individual audio CD for only $6. Or if you'd like the entire 22 teaching series, you can get it for a discounted price of $94. Find out more and order today at skipheitzig.com or when you call 1-800-922-1888. And you can also mail your request to The Connection, P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. And as we finish up today, I want to remind you there are only a few days left to take advantage of this special Connection resource.
Who is Jesus? Investigative journalist Lee Strobel began to wonder. After 14 years of reporting, he gave the Christian faith the same attention he gave his work.
Well, I was a journalist, so there was really no problem with me picking up the phone and calling a scholar and saying, hey, I'm Lee Strobel, I'm with the Chicago Tribune. I'd like some background information about the New Testament. And so I would do that, and I thought it was going to be so easy to expose the fallacious thinking behind Christianity, but as it turned out, it took me almost 2 years of my life to investigate these issues. It really was, in a sense, the most exciting story I'd ever pursued as a journalist.
This month's Connection resource follows Strobel's research with a three-movie DVD, The Case for Christ, The Case for Faith, and The Case for the Creator. Join Strobel as he uncovers the facts surrounding Christianity. This three-DVD package is yours for $25 when you order at skipheitzig.com or when you call 1-800-922-1888.
And if you enjoy The Connection, you'll definitely want to sign up for the podcast of The Connection. It's free to sign up, and you'll receive each connection broadcast delivered straight to your email as an MP3, ready for you to load up and listen to when you have time. That's the podcast at skipheitzig.com.
And make the connection at the foot of the cross. And study the word of God and find the way into his love. Make the connection.
So what allowed Paul to effectively interact with the culture he encountered in Athens? We'll talk about that more next time here on The Connection, a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.